Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio. This is a show about what matters most in our life, our minds, our thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. So in this show, I'll bring you the latest research about people with anxiety may strategically choose worrying over relaxing. Really? That's what the study says. Relaxing is supposed to be good for the body and the soul, but people with anxiety may actively resist relaxation and continue worrying to avoid a large jump in anxiety if something bad does happen. And then, appropriately, we're going to talk and we're going to speak with Dr. Pat McCarthy, who's an expert in medical hypnosis and is the author of best-selling self-help book, Relax, Say Goodbye to Anxiety and Panic. Be sure to subscribe to my podcast, YouTube channel, and social media. I'm on Twitter, Dr. Zain, and Instagram, Dr. Fujian Zain. Give me the review. Tell me what you like. Tell me what you don't like. Share with me some of the questions or topics that you want me to talk about and bring some experts to open up all. I want to hear from you. So contact me. Love to hear from you. We'll be right back with the tip of the week. Hello, this is Dr. Fujian Zain. For all of you who are interested in changing something in your life, or shifting a new career, or bettering your intimate relationship, or, you know, it's just time to take care of you, but you really don't have time to take off from your busy day, or you're just too far away from my Beverly Hills or San Clemente office, I have a great offer for you. I'm only offering this time-limited package to you. For online therapy, if you are living in the state of California, or online coaching wherever you live around the world. Now listen, a 10-week package with a $500 discount. Call me to schedule your appointment, 818-648-2140, 818-648-2140, or go to Fujian.com, Foojan.com for more information. It's time to take care of you. Because you are worth it. Welcome back. This week, I've been pondering about the concept of enrolling others into ideas and calling them to action. Now, we're all the recipient of being enrolled and asked to vote this week by the presidential candidates. We're asked by our employers to act on projects. We enroll our children to do what they need to do. You know, go study or go take a shower or do, you know, go play, do something. We enroll our mates to do certain actions, take the garbage out, or can we do some cleaning around the house, or can we do a couple of chores? Get the point. We're constantly either enrolling others into our ideas or being enrolled into some idea or a call for action. Somebody's going to ask us to do something, or we want somebody else to do something for us. So that's the concept of the enrollment, right? What is the difference between the presentations that call you to act and you find the urgency to act versus the ones that just kind of like sound like a good idea, but it won't really entice you to move forward? Could it be that you might feel non-trusting and feel manipulated and therefore you kind of like resist the call to act? And we probably see that a lot with our teenagers and when we were a teenager. When authority told us to do something, we just didn't want to do it. Or when we hear something on TV or teachers are talking about it, what is it that sometimes we are so motivated, so engaged, and so intrigued about something that it really moves us to take that action? And some other ones are like, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to do it. Or later, it's not that enticing. I know I got to do it, but just don't want to do it. And you can see that wherever you are, whether you're a recipient of it or actually someone who's trying to enroll another person to do something, right? We've been on both ends, all of us. We're probably daily, we're at both ends and we really experience it. Could it be that if it doesn't fully match our already known paradigm, then you dismiss it? So it has to be familiar to you. But if it's something new and that newness doesn't match what it is that you knew from before, you're like, no, I don't like it. Does it mean that every time you're enrolled, you have to create an action? Or could you be enrolled but not want to act? And if that's the case, what would stop you? If an idea is there and you really know that it's good for you, or you really know it's going to work for you, but yeah, you're just not going to do the action. So what stops you then? Do you feel responsible for enrolling others to do something if it does not turn out well for them? Or you feel detached from their outcome? I've known many people who, when I ask them, how come you don't share these ideas with, or ask somebody to do this, or ask your mate, and they're like, well, I just feel responsible. What if they don't like it? What if they're not happy with it? And then I feel bad that I've really got them to do something. This is something that constantly is utilized by sales. They enroll and close a deal, and sometimes they feel responsible for what it is, and a lot of times they're not responsible for the impact of how it had or whatever that product had for the other person. They're like, my job is just to enroll and sell. The rest of it is not my, you know, it has nothing to do with my responsibility. What is the difference in the outcome when you enroll someone into an action that benefits you rather than benefit them, right? Do you feel like a con artist? Do you feel like selfish? Or do you feel like, well, you know, the world is about enrolling each other. And most of the time when we're trying to get somebody to do something or give it an idea, most probably definitely impacts me and is beneficial for me. And that's why I'm saying it. Hopefully it's beneficial to you. And if it's not, then it's a one-way deal. And probably will be the last time you're going to listen to me enroll you in something. So it appears to me that when someone is clear, passionate and committed to their idea, thinks that it mutually benefits themselves as well as others, creates an urgency and is detached from the outcome of whether the person is going to do it or not, the message is delivered authentically. However, the responsibility of the person being enrolled and how they choose to act remains on the individual who's receiving the message. So the enroller has the responsibility of being authentic and clearly communicate their intention and the desired outcome. The enrollee has the responsibility of seeing how this idea and action impacts their own life and own the benefits as well as the consequences, since they are the ones who actually accepted it. So as I was going through this conversation this week, because obviously there's a lot of presidential ads that are coming and, you know, you're like, is it real? Is it not? Am I being conned? Am I not? You know, do I take this message or do I not? And then you look at it across your life and seeing how much of all of these matters are around in every aspect. Even right now, if I'm enrolling you in an idea, you are the receiver who's getting it. So this Saturday, I had the opportunity to go see Oprah Winfrey in her 2020 Vision event, which was amazing. And Oprah was talking most of the day, which was very new to see her in that light of not just, you know, kind of like being the interviewer and being part of the dialogue, but being the person who's actually doing the motivational talk and running and, you know, an exercise. And then in the evening, I went to the 60th birthday of Tony Robbins. Now, you know, Oprah and Tony Robbins both are very much like the celebrities who everybody knows, everybody loves, and they motivate people in different way, but they really, really motivate people. So I was sitting there, you know, Oprah Winfrey in the Forum, 14,000, and then Tony Robbins in the Microsoft Theater, like close to 4,000 people. And I'm sitting there looking at what is the element that these two people have who have the ability to enroll the world in that way, their world, and people who are listening to them. And you really got on both of them. I really got true authenticity, the love that they have for other people, and the reciprocal love that they were giving each other for themselves and the audience that was going. And they literally did this because they believe in it. They believe in what they say, and they know it's to the benefit of whomever is hearing it. And so it's a different feel. When you're sitting there, you're believing and trust the love that is there and the truth of the matter as the person sees it and offers it to you as a gift. And you can take it or you can leave it. You can use it and the best of your capacity. So this was what I really, really experienced this week, and I wanted to share it with you. So may you be open to all ideas, and may you choose what's right for you as well as others. We'll be right back with the latest research.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
So here's the latest research. Relaxing is supposed to be good for the body and soul, but people with anxiety may actively resist relaxation and continue worrying to avoid a large jump in anxiety if something bad does happen, according to Penn State research recently published in the Journal of Affective Disorders. In this new study, the researchers found that people who were more sensitive to shifts in negative emotion quickly moving from a relaxed state to one of fear, for example, were more likely to feel anxious while being led through a relaxation exercise. Michelle Newman, professor of psychology, said that the results could help benefit people who experience relaxation-induced anxiety, a phenomenon that occurs when people actually become more anxious during a relaxation training. People may be staying anxious to prevent a large shift in anxiety, but it's actually healthier to let yourself experience those shifts. The more you do it, the more you realize you can do it, and it's better to allow yourself to be relaxed at times. Mindfulness training and other interventions can help people let go and live in the moment. Newman said that while researchers have known about relaxation-induced anxiety since the 1980s, the specific cause of this phenomenon has remained unknown. When Newman developed the contrast avoidance theory in 2011, she thought the two concepts might be connected. The theory revolves around the idea that people may make themselves anxious intentionally as a way to avoid the letdown they might get if something bad were to happen. This isn't actually helpful and just makes you more miserable. But because most of the things we worry about don't end up happening, what's reinforced in the brain is, I'm worried, and it didn't happen, so I should just continue to worry. For this study, the researchers recruited 96 college students. Participants included 32 people with generalized anxiety disorder, 34 people with major depressive disorder, and 30 controls with neither disorders. When the participants arrived at the lab, the researchers led them through relaxation exercises before having them watch videos and may elicit fear or sadness. The participants then answered a list of questions designed to measure how sensitive they were to change in their emotional state. For example, some people may be uncomfortable with the negative emotions incited by the videos right after relaxing, while others might find the relaxation session helpful in dealing with those emotions. Next, researchers led the participants through a relaxation session once more before having them fill out the second survey. These questions were designed to measure the participants' anxiety during the second relaxation session. After analyzing the data, the researchers found that people with generalized anxiety disorder were more likely to be sensitive to sharp spikes in emotions, like going from feeling relaxed to feeling scared or stressed. Additionally, the sensitivity was linked to feeling anxious during sessions intended to induce relaxation. The researchers found similar results in people with major depressive disorder, although the effect wasn't as strong. Measuring relaxation-induced anxiety and implementing exposure techniques targeting the desensitization of negative contrast sensitivity may help the patients reduce their anxiety. Also, it would be important to examine relaxation-induced anxiety in other disorders such as panic disorder and persistent mild depression. I have really seen a lot of that in my clients, especially when they tell them to meditate, their anxiety spikes, or you're trying to have them relax their anxiety. Like they want, their system wants to be alert and make sure that they're always alert because they think that if they relax and they're not going to be ready. And sometimes that peak of fear again puts them in a place, see, I'm not ready. I always have to be hyper vigilant. So there are other techniques which will bring down the anxiety, and appropriately so. Guess who we have? We have Dr. Pat McCarthy, who is an expert in medical hypnosis. He was a medical officer in St. John's Hospital in Mzuzu, Malawi, and now and the president of New Zealand Society of Hypnosis. He is the author of best-selling book Relax, Say Goodbye to Anxiety and Panic, and his other book, Quit, Say Goodbye to Smoking, and How to Cure Anxiety in Just 4 Therapy Sessions. Yes, everybody, 4 therapy sessions. And I have seen him in action, and he's amazing, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Dr. Pat McCarthy.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want. You deserve it.
Hello, this is Dr. Fujian Zain. For all of you who are interested in changing something in your life, or shifting a new career, or bettering your intimate relationship, or, you know, it's just time to take care of you, but you really don't have time to take off from your busy day, or you're just too far away from my Beverly Hills or San Clemente office, I have a great offer for you. I'm only offering this time-limited package to you for online therapy, if you aren't living in the state of California, or online coaching wherever you live around the world. Now listen, a 10-week package with a $500 discount. Call me to schedule your appointment, 818-648-2140, 818-648-2140, or go to Fujian.com, Foojan.com for more information. It's time to take care of you because you are worth it.
Welcome back, everyone, to a Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian Zain. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I'm so excited to have Dr. Pat McCarthy from New Zealand with us. Welcome to my show.
Thank you. Thank you.
It is so great to have you. I met you at the Ericksonian Congress last December in Phoenix, Arizona, and came to your workshop, actually. And I was pleasantly surprised in seeing, because at the beginning you had said that you have worked with so many thousand people without even knowing what the necessarily what their issue was or what they needed for their past was. And I was a little bit iffy, like, well, you know, how does that work when you're just doing this kind of like a general concept? And as I was sitting and you were doing one of your techniques with all of us who were sitting there, I was truly pleasantly surprised that in such a short time, your techniques are so thorough. And I could see definitely as I went through and experienced it, how valuable they are. So thank you for doing that. But I also know that you have come to this based on your own experience, and you have really created almost close to 40 different types of strategies of how to do this hypnosis. But before you share with us how that works, tell us a little bit about what is a medical hypnosis? Because people have heard of medical doctors, they've heard of hypnosis, but to bring these together, can you tell us about this?
Well, let me tell you how I got involved in hypnosis, because that will explain to you. I was working as a family doctor, what we call a general practitioner in this country, and a woman came in who was pregnant for the second time, and I told her that she was pregnant, and she burst into tears. And she told me that the first delivery had been so traumatic, she couldn't envisage going through a second delivery. And this woman was utterly traumatized, but her notes were just average. And it seemed really strange. And my heart went out to her and I said, if you could learn how to do self-hypnosis and be in control of the labor, would you like to learn that? And her eyes lit up and she said, sure. So I asked the local psychologist, would this be a good idea? And he said, fantastic, but I don't know how to do it. I said, well, who does? He said, oh, the professor at the pain clinic in Auckland Hospital. So I phoned him up and he said, brilliant idea. I said, who in New Zealand teaches obstetric hypnosis? And he said, no one. Mm-hmm. No one. And I said, oh, do you guys run a training course? And he said, yep, once a year. And I thought, when's the next one? Hoping he wouldn't say 9 months' time. And he said, it's next weekend, and there's one place left in the training schedule. So I got on a plane and I went there. And he said to me, now you have to have a relaxing voice for hypnosis. Can you say, just sit back, close your eyes and listen to the sound of my voice? And I said, just sit back and close your eyes and listen the sound of my voice. And he said, you're a natural. And I said, well, I'm the eldest of 10 children and I've always been a storyteller.
Right.
So I decided there and then that some doctor had to offer hypnosis that was ethical and scientific, and it dealt with all the medical and psychological problems that people had. So I started the first ever medical hypnosis practice in 1996. And if you'd said to me, Fujian, that 24 years later, it would still be the only medical hypnosis practice in New Zealand, I would have not believed you.
Right.
Right.
But here's the other thing. When I started, I had no colleagues, no mentors. And I said to my wife, I want to find the cure for anxiety. And she, being Scottish, said, why don't you do something simple like the cure for cancer? And I said, no, I'm serious. And the good news is that after working away in complete professional isolation in New Zealand, I've discovered the cure for anxiety.
And that is exciting. And I know that you have stated that we can cure or possibly cure anxiety in just 4 30-minute sessions. Four 30-minute sessions. That is all.
Right. Well, basically, let me take you through it, please. Give you the gist of it. If you ask why, what, where, when, and who, you get thousands of answers about anxiety. But if you ask the question, how do people get anxious? How is the mechanism? And it turns out there is only one mechanism for anxiety. And every family doctor knows the mechanism. The mechanism of anxiety is called sympathetic overactivity.
Yes.
Now, for your listeners, we have what's called an autonomic nervous system. And it has two legs. It has a sympathetic and a parasympathetic. And for your listeners, you could think of them as the gas pedal or the brake pedal. Because when you switch on the sympathetic, the heart rate goes up, the blood pressure goes up, the muscles get tense, the mind gets anxious. And all the treatments, till I came along, was aimed at reducing the sympathetic overactivity. Have a beer, take a few relaxing breaths, go for a walk, do a bit of yoga. But I said, well, why don't we switch on the brake pedal, the parasympathetic? And everyone said, well, how? So that was my first goal, to find how to switch on parasympathetic predominance in every part of the body in less than 60 seconds.
And was it the hope that they were working with the sympathetic to get to the parasympathetic, but you're saying I just needed to go directly to the parasympathetic?
Directly to the parasympathetic, produce parasympathetic predominance in less than 60 seconds, and woof, there is no anxiety.
Right.
But Fujian, you still have to think, how did the sympathetic become overactive? Mm-hmm. And this is where the triggers come in, the whys and the whats. But you can divide them into four categories: unwanted emotions, unwanted thoughts, unwanted physical feelings, or unwanted images. And it took me 8 years to figure out how to displace and replace those things in less than 1 second.
Wow.
And I've taught this to more than 10,000 people all in New Zealand. But then you have to think, okay, how do we get those horrible triggers? And the answer is by thinking like a pessimist. So the opposite of thinking like a pessimist is thinking like an optimist. And there's an American chap called Martin Seligman who's written a book called The Optimistic Child.
Yes.
Where he teaches parents how to make their children more optimistic. I encourage people to get a copy of that book. My final session is to teach them how to recognize when they're tricking themselves. You see, Fujian, anxiety is caused by having a mistaken belief and then making the mistake of believing it.
Right.
And I've got a technique for not having the mistaken belief. That's the displacement and replacement one. But this technique is about not believing the unwanted thought. And as long as you cannot believe the thought, you don't become anxious.
Definitely.
Now, I thought that would cure every single person with anxiety. And no person has ever found a fault in my logic of the mechanism. Seriously. After 24 years, no one's found a flaw in the logic. But it only cured 80% of people with anxiety. And that really annoyed me. My wife pointed out what was missing. The other 20% had significant emotional baggage from their past. And that was the technique that I demonstrated in Phoenix, how to park all emotional baggage without any need for disclosure of the problems. You see, Fujian, I often say to people, I'm a bit like a taxi driver or a cab driver therapist. And they look at me like, what do you mean? And I say, I only have one question. Where do you want to go? And people say, well, I want to tell you where I've been. And I say, look, I'm a cab driver. Forgive me, but I honestly don't care where you've been. I only want to know where you want to go. But then they start saying, I don't want to go to the airport and I don't want to go to the zoo. That's the same. I don't want to be anxious. I don't want to be afraid. And I say, well, what do you want? And for the first time in their life, they're saying, I want to be relaxed. I want to be calm. I want to be confident. I want to be assertive. And I say, and over the next three sessions, those are the skills that I will teach you. You see, I'm a perfectionist. And my patients don't have an open-ended budget.
Right.
And they don't have insurance cover usually. So I decided that I had to find a cure for every problem, not just for anxiety, for anorexia, for bruxism, for constipation, for fear of flying, for every letter of the alphabet all the way up to zoophilia.
So any type of fears and phobias?
Any type of fear. Fear of an elevator, fear on a plane, fear of a dog, fear of anything. It's the same mechanism. Exactly the same mechanism. The same treatment cures all of it. Now, I'm coming across to San Diego in September to do a workshop for therapists about this. And it's going to astonish them because of the simplicity of my approach. You see, what I've done, I've perfected the spiel for each session. Most therapists say that they want to apply it to the individual. But I'm not talking about the individual. I'm talking about the anxiety that grips them.
You're talking about also the parasympathetic response, because you're going directly to that, which it's similar in every human being. Yes. As a biological concept, regardless of what triggered it.
It's similar in every animal on the planet. When you scare a cat, its sympathetic nervous system becomes active. When you scare a dog or a rabbit or a mouse or a lion or a giraffe, it's the sympathetic nervous system. But the antidote has to be the parasympathetic. Now, how come people don't talk about this? How come I'm the only person saying parasympathetic predominance is the antidote? But there's two levels above that. There's all the triggers, and you have to displace them. There's the optimistic thinking. You can learn that from the book. But if you don't believe the unwanted thoughts, if I can show you how to quickly cancel that out. And in fact, I'm going to give a presentation to the public in September. It's been organized by a woman called Barbara Varga. And I'm going to talk about, on one day, how to stop smoking in less than 1 hour. Boof. And it's got a 66% cure rate for smoking, higher than anything else in the world. And on the Monday, I'm going to talk to people, the public, about how to not be anxious. And I'm really looking forward to that, because I've been coming across to America to give workshops for an hour and a half or 2 hours. And everyone stands up and gives a standing ovation and applauds. But this woman, Barbara Varga, said, why don't you come across to San Diego and teach us for two full days? And I'm going to give this my deluxe version, basically.
Yeah, I met her. I met Barbara with you, actually, in Phoenix. And it was a delight to know that your methodology is coming to US, because I know that your books are not even necessarily in English, they were done in German. So we're also trying to get your books in English so that, you know, that your methodology moves beyond New Zealand and comes to the rest of the world. And again, I'm, you know, I've done hypnosis for almost 20 years. I've learned from Dr. Zeig, from Yapko, from the best in hypnosis. And I've done hypnosis for almost 20 years with my clients. I did the medical hypnosis of actually, you know, freezing the hand, going with somebody who was doing an oral surgery. And I was in the surgery with them, to working with them consistently in order to go through that, because they had allergies to all the chemicals. And have worked also, like you said, with pregnant women who were giving birth, and obviously with anxiety and depression, but still sitting at the lecture, at your lecture, again, how precise and efficient you were, you know, taking us through these steps were really, really astonishing. And they were, again, it was like very positive surprise, like with a smile at the end coming out, like, wow. And I, it was so beautiful that every single sentence that you utilize, it's intentional. It's very intentional in how you systematically progress the person into and how to release and how to shift their perspective. Just to let a little bit about our audience really getting what it is, because you said you go straight to the parasympathetic. Can you explain a little bit and how do you go directly to the parasympathetic? Because I think the notion, I think everybody knows, the medical doctors, the therapists, even the people who have anxiety, they get it, that they're getting active and they got to get themselves into the other system, which is relaxes their body, they feel safe. And, you know, the rest of the chemicals and hormones will pull through to say, okay, I'm no longer in danger and I can calm down. But I think most of the techniques have gone toward calming down the sympathetic, and that's why you see the meditation or some of the self-hypnosis going toward that, or relaxation techniques. And the research right before you came on from Penn State was that a lot of people won't allow themselves to get relaxed because they think they have to be in this hypervigilant state. And even if there's somebody trying to relax them, they're like, no, I'm going to come back and hold myself up at that hypervigilance to be ready for fear, you know, to be ready to either run or fight or do something about it. Because if I just let myself relax, then I'm going to be damaged somehow because of that inappropriate or like unhealthy belief that they create and then they believe in. How do you directly go to the parasympathetic responses to just activate them actually?
Well, it takes me half an hour to, just with the cadence and rhythm of my voice, it starts to change their brainwave pattern. And this activates the parasympathetic, and their heart rate drops, and their blood pressure falls, and their muscles loosen. And then at the end, I teach them how to go back into that lovely state. And I've got a very simple technique that anyone who's got two hands available can learn to do. Now, I don't want any of your listeners who are driving a car or child minding or operating machinery to do this. But if they just put your hands together in a prayer-like position, and then you cross your thumbs over, and you intermingle your fingers, and you extend your index fingers straight out to parallel, and then you stare at the gap between the fingers, your brain will draw the fingers together like magnets. When the fingers touch, just simply close your eyes, take a big breath in, and as you breathe out, feel the relaxation flowing through your body. And with every out-breath, you are relaxed. Now, what I'm going to teach when I come to America in September is 10 times more relaxing than that. But that's a little taster for you. How was that?
I think the hand movement itself One focuses you into your body. And then as you're getting focused into the body, it's you're feeling more, I feel more safe. And almost like allowing the flow of the body to take me into a deeper state. That's what I experienced.
Yeah, well, what's fascinating is that I don't know how many listeners you've got at the moment and what their experience was, because I gave enough instruction as to how simply to do it. And this is something I discovered by accident one day. And there's a physiological reason of how this works, but it's a bit technical, so I don't want to bother your listeners with the technical details. But this works every single time. Yeah.
I've also seen some of these hand connections in yoga and Ayurveda medicine, of the different types when you're meditating and whichever movement that you do, whether it's this hand, or, you know, you go like this, or whichever the fingers, it operates on a different kind of a level of an energy system that works toward. But it seems like this one, as you're seeing everybody go through it, and it creates more inward relaxation. They go in and deeper, it seems like.
I call this a relaxation reflex. Now, you have what's called a patellar reflex. If I tap below your kneecap, your foot will jump out. This is a relaxation reflex that I've discovered. I haven't invented it. I've discovered it. But it made me realize that parasympathetic was the key to relaxation. So I wrote a book, How to Cure Anxiety in Just 4 Therapy Sessions. But I couldn't get a publisher in this country. They said there's not enough therapists. But this chap in Germany said, would you mind if it was translated into German? So on the 15th of November just passed, this book came out. And it's called Wie man Angst in nur 4 Therapy Sitzungen heilt, which translates directly as How to Cure Anxiety in Just 4 Therapy Sessions. And it's become a bestseller. And my inbox is going crazy with requests to speak all over the world. I mean already I'm speaking in Turkey in May and England. And I'm booked next year for Toronto and Poland. And it's like suddenly after 25 years working in complete isolation, people like yourself have discovered me and said, come on, you've got to come and spread this, the simplicity of these techniques worldwide. But I'm looking forward to coming to America in September. I love the optimism that you Americans have. And I have a theory that small population countries are more pessimistic than large population countries, because we feel like the little brother of the big one. And I happen to live in New Zealand, which I can tell you is one of the most amazing countries in the world. And for a lot of people, it's on their bucket list to visit New Zealand.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
But when you come to New Zealand, you will be constantly asked, what do you think of New Zealand? By New Zealanders who need reassurance that we're okay. This is a fabulous country. When you see Lord of the Rings, most of that scenery isn't CGI. It's real. It's astonishing. You might have seen a movie called Avatar.
Yes.
I was in it.
Oh, were you?
Seriously, look, 8 minutes in, the only person in the room wearing glasses, wearing spectacles, is me. When Jake comes down the aisle in his wheelchair, look to the left of the colonel and you will see me.
Oh, I gotta
go
see it again.
Wellington. I was an extra on the movie.
It's awesome. Definitely have to go by and see it. I think that there's also the culture. I think not all large countries, I think, but the culture of America is the optimism, is their new creation, is going from, you know, European countries or now from any other country to coming to create the American dream, which is you can reach the sky, you can reach anything that you want. And I think that's part of the culture that you get to see, where the optimism is kind of innately set into the way that the United States was created, and then keep going with that concept of optimism. And it brings the brain of the world all here to bring the ideas and keep moving forward. And I think that's the beauty of this culture as it is. So I can see where it's sweet to see this type of an optimism and wanting to bring. But with it also, it has not, with all the optimism that you see, it has not been that the amount of anxiety and depression is less than the rest of the world, that the amount of addiction at this point to everything, opiates and everything else, that is less than the rest of the world. So optimism is here, but anxiety, depression, addiction, and all of the abuse and everything else is side by side here. So
let me teach you something very interesting. Self-esteem cannot be taught to you. Nobody can say something to you and increase your self-esteem. And this is the problem with a lot of people in America, low self-esteem. The only thing that gives you self-esteem is mastery over adversity. Facing up to a challenge and overcoming it. Now, if you've got a small child who's crawling towards a coloured ball, and the child crawls backwards away from the ball and gets frustrated, you've got to let the child crawl forward and forward and forward and watch that child's face when it gets the ball. That is self-esteem. That is mastery over adversity. Do not ever roll the ball towards the child. Say, there's the ball. You've robbed that child of the chance of self-esteem. The only way you'll gain self-esteem yourself challenges and overcoming them. And that's why I give people homework exercises in between the sessions to do things that are just out of their comfort zone, and they achieve them. And that's where they get the self-esteem. You Americans are into boosterism. Oh, you're fabulous and wonderful and amazing and gorgeous and, you know, and it's not believable, right? It doesn't cut the mustard. It just doesn't work. There's no such thing as a free lunch. You have to do the hard work. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and I think there have been some research that showed that because of this type of a constantly feeding fallacy of, good titles to people, that a lot more narcissism shows up with the children and the new generation without necessarily the foundation of a self-esteem under it. But it's just a lot of like, let me just praise you, with nothing really attending to the praise. So I really get what you're saying. I want to ask you one question before our time ends. And I know that you said that you have over 38 or 40 different types of algorithms, let's say, or sessions that you have created. Although you also say it's simple and we go into within four sessions, how did you distinguish and saw the need to have the different types of the algorithm or the different kinds of hypnosis sessions that you have created?
Okay, well, I have about what are called 20 intake sessions, which are carefully choreographed. And the intake sessions are then followed by the three best skills that people require to deal with their problem. So, for instance, the anxiety intake session starts with my signature question: what do you want to change? Not what is your problem, not what brings you here. Those are questions about the past. I start with, what do you want to change? And you have to answer me using positive terms only. And then I have to figure out, what do you require to get to calmness, you need predominance, step one. You need thought displacement and replacement in less than a second. You need how to recognize your unwanted thoughts as being ridiculous. And then finally, you might have to learn how to park all of your emotional baggage without having to talk about it. And Fujian, that's the cure for anxiety. It's not spending a year dragging up your history and your past and your upbringing. That's just ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching for therapists.
Right.
I'm obsessive about treating everything, the worst case of anxiety, the worst case of depression, everything. Four sessions, occasionally if it's really bad, five or six. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I would feel like a failure.
So the different ones that you've created has to do with the destination. So if somebody says, this is what I want, that the wordings go toward the type of the destination that they want to go.
Yeah, so for instance, if you're afraid of spiders, I've got a session where I'll teach you how to imagine the spider having the same fears as the person with the spider fear. Oh, look at the legs. This woman's legs are long and hairy. And I use the words about her fear of spiders. Mm-hmm. And it's called anthropomorphic comedy hypnosis. Anthropomorphism is giving an animal human characteristics.
Right.
And people in hypnosis feel sorry for the terrified little spider.
Right.
And it changes their mindset.
Yeah, you're changing completely the frame of mind of how they're doing that.
I get people coming in and they go, I feel guilty because I broke a promise. And everyone keeps telling me, you shouldn't feel guilty. It wasn't your fault or something like that. And I've been like this for 10 years. And I come in and I say, do you know why you feel guilty? You are guilty.
Yes. So
the question is, what's the punishment? 10 years is enough.
Yes.
Time served. Get out.
Yes, absolutely. You're free. You've done your terms and time. Dr. McCarthy, it was a pleasure having you. How could people find you? And even if they wanted to come into the San Diego in September to see you, and whether they're therapists who are listening to us or public, where can they go and find you? Do you have a website?
I do have a website, but here's what I'll do. Find me. I'm not going to give you a clue. I'm the only medical hypnotist in New Zealand. I shouldn't be that hard to find.
So Google.
If you're not bright enough to find me, right?
Okay.
Find me.
So find Dr. Pat McCarthy in New Zealand, and you will find him. And then definitely, I'm sure that Barbara will put all of the information about the two lectures so that people can come in. I truly thank you. It was a pleasure meeting you in Phoenix. It's a pleasure to have you on my show, and hopefully I'll see you soon enough and somewhere, and maybe even September in San Diego. So thank you.
All the very best.
And for all of you out there, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone. Until next week, bye-bye.